So darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me.
Do you remember your best friend from when you were a kid? Are you still friends with that best friend? Well, I'm guessing if you're a man, you probably aren't. And you probably don't have a close friendship with another man today. Am I right? Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Thursday, November the 10th. Well, if that's right or wrong, we would love to hear from you this hour as we talk about male friendships and why, as boys grow older, they tend to shed their intimate friendships, much of like what we saw in the movie Stand By Me, a movie about a group of boyhood friends who grew apart as they grew older. We're going to talk about why this is and what it means for all of us. Our guest says that boys and men need intimate friendships as much as girls and women, and we'll welcome your input at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Niobe Way, author of Deep Secrets, Boys' Friendships, and the Crisis of Connection. She's a professor of applied psychology at New York University and president of the Society for Research on Adolescence. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for joining us. Well, yes. Why do you call this a crisis of connection?
Well, what we're facing, and this is really coming from about 20 years of research listening to boys and girls, actually, but the book is focused on boys, listening to how they're losing the close friendships that they have during when they're teenagers, and then as they grow up, growing increasingly isolated. And what you're seeing across the United States right now, and you see it in all sorts of studies, not just mine, is this declining connectedness. So the people are reporting having fewer friends, having fewer people to turn to in times of need. We're really becoming much more isolated. So not only are boys facing a crisis of connection, but what I really find from the data is that we're as a country really facing a crisis of connection.
Yeah, so even women don't have the close friendships as we used to?
Yeah, I mean, basically, I think that it's tougher for men, boys and men, and that's the point of the book, is you see that. But I also think it affects women, too. I mean, I think the whole thing is we're not valuing our connections as much as we should, because it has real consequences to our livelihood, and we're not valuing it as enough as we should, and we're becoming increasingly isolated. And you see that increase across the board in all sorts of studies.
Yeah, and it is, though, you say, why did you focus on boys?
Well, this is the thing. It was interesting. I was a high school counselor in the 80s, in the a good part of the late 80s. And when I started counseling high school kids, I thought I would hear stories about girlfriends, from boys, from girlfriends and parents and school and teachers that were being a pain in the butt and all those kinds of things. What astounded me is that what boys wanted to talk about is their friendships. They wanted to talk about the betrayals that were happening in their friendships. They wanted to talk about negotiating how to have good friendships, how to keep their friendships over time. And that was really consumed their time with me. And so then I began, as a researcher, I'm a developmental psychologist, I began to pursue actually listening to boys talk about their friendships as they go through teenage years. From about 11 to 19, I listened to them over many, many years talking about their friendships, and then began to realize this is a core part of their life. This is not just a sort of tangential thing that they have as a part of a sports team. This is really central to their mental health. And, you know, the striking thing is, Joy, they tell me directly that it's critical for their mental health. They say things like, if I didn't have these close friendships, I would go wacko. You know, if I didn't have them, I would go crazy. I need someone to talk to. I need someone to tell my intimate, deep secrets to. And then as they get older, this is the tragedy. As they get older, they start to disconnect from their friends because they, you know, we live in a culture where having those kinds of intimate friendships are associated with being girly and even gay. And so we sort of stereotype these basic human relationships as associated with only one, you know, with only one sex, girls, and only one sexuality, which is gay. And then the boys start to, straight boys in particular, start to back off from having those relationships. But then they talk about being lonely. They say it directly to me, Joy,
mm-hmm.
right? They say they're lonely. They feel isolated. They talk about how even if they have a girlfriend, they miss that friendship. And then guess what happens? Right at the time that I hear the loss, the suicide rate in the United States goes up at the exact same age that we began to hear the loss in boys' friendships, about 15, 16, and it becomes five times the rate of girls, where previously it was about three times the rate of girls. So the point is it jumps up, the suicide rate jumps up, and then you get this incredible kind of isolation, and then you get a men, right, across the board in studies, various studies, as well as just anecdotal data I have from the responses to the book, writing me and talking about their own isolation and their attempts to try to find those relationships they had earlier in life.
Oh, and so certainly it's a crisis in, to the individual, but you say it's also a big problem for society.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is the thing. Now, what's coming out now in the health research is that they're now showing that, you know, if you take almost any social problem, it could be dropping out of school, it could be teenage pregnancy, it could be violent behavior, sexual harassment, any kind of thing that we're really struggling with as a culture. If you begin to look at the research in terms of the roots of that kind of behavior, it all comes down to what I call a crisis of connection, which is that boys are not connecting well with each other, they're not having good quality friendships, they're not actually having someone, right, a peer particularly, because that's so important to them, to have someone to turn to in times of need, so they're feeling isolated. And essentially, what happens when you feel isolated, and the boys tell you this directly, is they quote-unquote go wacko, meaning they start to act poorly, and they start to do things that they know aren't the right thing to do, but they're desperately trying to get sort of feel connected and somehow, and so they oftentimes seek a sort of dysfunctional way of connecting. And the question is, though, this is a fundamental. If we raise boys to believe that, you know, being emotional, being sensitive, having quality intimate relationships with other boys and girls and, you know, other people, if we raise them to believe that somehow that's only for girls, they grow up and they act crazy. And by crazy, I don't mean that in a positive way. I mean, they do bad things. Because, you know, ultimately, if you raise people to go against their nature, right, and their nature is to be social, emotional beings, that's what we are, humans. We're social and emotional beings. And you raise them to go against that nature, they act out. And so most of our social problems, that's the fundamental root of it. As well as you have health consequences. You see shorter lives as a result of a lack of social support. You see findings, hundreds and hundreds of findings are now finding that one of the biggest risk factors for death is poor social support, not having friends in your life.
And I don't want to change our focus at all, but you even think that things like the sexual harassment, that kind of thing is linked to this issue.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Because this is the thing. Part of having quality relationships, what are you learning in quality relationships and in good friendships? What you're learning is you're learning empathy. You're fostering your empathy. You're fostering your ability to feel other people's feelings, to be able to take other people's perspective. Right? That's what you're learning as you, and you're fostering as you have these relationships. So when you don't have them, you become more, right? It's harder and harder for you to sort of take, you know, focus on how that may feel to another person. So sexual harassment is a classic example of just absolutely no care whatsoever and no thought about how that may feel to another person. So I would say, and this again, it's not, you know, I want to make clear this is not my opinion. This is really drawn from the research, is that, you know, if you're not fostering those skills, those basic human skills, empathy is a basic human skill. And if you're not fostering it, if you're not helping to promote it, that what happens is people start acting, you know, strangely. They start doing mean things. They start acting out in different ways. And you even see it, again, not to change the topic too much, but you even see it with our politicians in terms of, you know, acting incredibly poorly with their spouses and the kinds of behaviors they're doing. And you think, what's the problem? Yes, okay, there could be a power issue there. But I think the more fundamental problem is, again, we're raising our boys and men to go against their nature. And their nature is to be deeply emotional, sensitive beings. That's why we've thrived as a species. Charles Darwin said that. We all know that. Our social skills is what allows us to thrive as a species. And yet we raise boys and men to somehow believe this is a girl thing.
So how do we raise our boys to be men with friends?
Well, this is, I think there's multiple different approaches I think you can take. So one is, and this is, you know, again, listening to boys, hundreds and hundreds of boys over so many years, they tell me this, you know, straight out of their mouths. You know, talk to them about their relationships. Talk to them about what's going on at school in terms of their peers. And the thing for parents that it's hard. I'm a mother of an 11-year-old and a 9-year-old, so I know the temptation for parents when they talk about friendships with their kids. We oftentimes tend to go into the, you should be friends with this kid and not friends, right? That's the talk. It's sort of dictating who are good friends and who are bad friends. What I'm talking about is much more fundamental. It's much more giving space to have your kids process what happened in school today, who said what to whom, did that make you, right? You know, if a kid said something to another kid that made you feel bad. We oftentimes do that with our daughters. We don't do that with our sons. We think somehow when they say, you know, how was school today, and they say, fine, whatever, we just sort of let it go. But the reality is that boys want to talk. They want to talk. Now, they may not always want to talk to you as a parent, because, you know, I think that just varies, and it varies by mood, and it varies by, you know, lots of different factors. But they definitely want to talk. So figuring out ways to sort of create situations in which they can sort of talk about what's happening, talk about in their relationships, invite their friends over to your house, allow slumber parties with their friends, take the best friend on a family trip that you're taking, so that, you know, they have your son has a time to sort of really hang out with their best friend in an intimate way with the family. I mean, there's lots of different ways you can integrate friends into your life in addition to talking to your son. The other thing I would say is that model this, you know, model good relationships. Show your sons and your daughters what good relationships look like, both your friendships as well as if you have a partner. Model good relationships, because kids are absorbing. They're absorbing their whole world. And if they see good friendships, I try to talk to my kids about my friendships. I try to have my friends over to the house all the time. So they see that it's, you know, these are valuable relationships, and that also they can be challenging, right? I talk to my son about, you know, sometimes I get my feelings hurt by someone will, you know, not return my phone call, a close friend of mine, and I'll talk about how that makes me feel bad, and then how I'm going to deal with it, so that he sort of gets the sense, okay, you know, this is real for mom, and his father does it in the same way.
We are talking with Niobe Way. She's author of Deep Secrets, Boys' Friendships, and the Crisis of Connection, talking about how boys need close friends, how important those friendships are to them, and how they lose their close, intimate friends as they grow older. We're talking about why this is and why it's a crisis and what can be done about it. Welcoming your questions and maybe even your own stories. Are you a man who doesn't have any really close male friends? Really, really close friends? Why do you suppose that is? Or maybe you buck the trend. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page as we talk about the importance of male friendships. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
I love you. I'm not even embarrassed to say it. I love you.
I'm not embarrassed.
Love you.
I love you.
That's from the movie Superbad, about high school best friends who express their love for each other, but they are drunk. talking about male friendships. And I want to ask our guest a little bit about the so-called bromance in just a moment. But welcoming your thoughts and questions about male friendships, boy friendships, and what happens as they grow older. Does society force boys to man up and ignore their emotional needs? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Niobe Way is author of Deep Secrets, Boys' Friendships, and the Crisis of Connection. What about the bromance, Niobe?
Okay, yeah. So the bromance is an interesting phenomenon. So when it first sort of came on the cultural scene a few years ago, I was actually quite excited because I thought, okay, now we're getting someplace. We're really recognizing, you know, the power and the sort of the extent of the love between friends, male friends. And then as you began to sort of, as I began to investigate it more, there was an MTV show called Bromance for one season. And what you realized, it was almost like the wolf in sheep's clothing, that it was sort of talking about the intimacy. But when you saw men sort of acting it out, at least in the media, it was all focused on sort of, you know, getting wasted together and picking up women, and it wasn't the kind of intimacy that I'm talking about or that the boys are talking about. I mean, it wasn't about expressing vulnerability. It wasn't about having that kind of, you know, real friend who you could turn to when things are bad and you need someone to talk to. It was more about the story we've heard throughout, you know, the last many, many decades, that men like to hang out with other men, to go to bars and do kind of, you know, various kinds of things. And that's not a criticism. That's a desire. Women have that desire too. But that's not the friendships where, you know, that's a problem to lose.
Has this been a problem though? Well, forever? Have guys always had not a lot of guy friends? Is this anything brand new?
Okay, well, I'm so glad you asked that question. So this is a fascinating thing. When you look in the friendships in the 19th century and the early part of the 20th century, what you find is that male friendships were extremely intimate, and the intimacy was very public. You even had in the 19th century, you had honeymoons where people took their best friend on their honeymoons. And, you know, and we think how crazy that sounds right now to us. But it really was a different context. Friendships were definitely seen as a core part of your well-being, and that you incorporated into your home life. And so you see that in an early part of our history, as well as you see in other cultures. And when you start to look at other cultures around the world, you see that the value of friendships is so much more in so many different countries. There's places that have a ceremony, like a marital ceremony, but for best friends, you know, that you find incredible stories about how much other cultures take these best friends seriously and see them truly as important as a romantic partner. And we're you know, in a moment, and there's lots of reasons why, I think, that we really only value our romantic partnership and our children, of course. And I think that that's, you know, the data suggests that that's a problem.
Yeah. And you write about how men today, if they do have a close male friend, that they'll make sure they use the phrase, "No homo."
Exactly. I mean, you know, I get this, and by the way, Joy, I really get this not only from the hundreds of boys I've interviewed, but from all my men friends, my male friends, my brothers. You know, I mean, it's pervasive, that there's a sense that somehow, if you have an intimate friendship, that's going to immediately relate to your sexuality. And so then there's a defensiveness that then gets provoked, and boys will say things like, which is obviously a homophobic phrase, they'll start saying "no homo." They'll say something like, "We're close, no homo." You know, it's, you know, we have a good relationship, no homo. So it's like almost anything, you know, remotely intimate, and they'll follow it up with "no homo." Now, I want to point out, though, that only starts at 15, 16, 17 years old. You don't hear that at 12, 13, 14. I mean, they're able to say, "I love him. I would, you know, I would feel lost without him. He's, you know, he's my heart." I mean, you know, basically, we share everything with each other. He doesn't make me feel weak and vulnerable. He helps me through my problems. I mean, basically, you know, there's so much expression there, and then the language just shifts. It just changes. as they become a man. It just literally, the emotional language drops out, the openly, explicitly vulnerable language drops out of their language, and all of a sudden you get this frustrated language, this angry language, this, you know, these homophobic phrases, and then boys would feel, also say, I feel isolated. I wish I had those friendships. I miss them.
Yeah, didn't your own brother have a very close friendship that that broke up and it really affected him deeply?
Yeah, his whole life. Mm. he's now 42. He had a friendship when he was younger, and for some unknown reason, the friend abandoned him. He never quite understood why that was the case. I remember as a kid watching that sort of that unfold and being mystified not only at why his friend left him, because it was really unclear, but also being really affected by how much it was affecting my brother, and how much it was so painful for him, and then realizing that the same thing was happening to the boys who I counseled, and then the same thing was happening to the boys who I was doing research with. It's stunning to me. And then you hear, you know, Stand By Me is fascinating as a cultural phenomenon, because it really does pick up the exact same themes. It's the exact same, it's the Hollywood representation of this loss. And at some level, we all know it, but somehow we still go back to this notion that boys are somehow by nature, you know, less empathic or less emotional, or they don't need the intimate friendships like girls do. And I mean, we still go back to that, even though we know a very different story.
Yeah, and indeed, you wrote about Stand By Me and how this relates to your issue.
Yeah.
The 25th anniversary of that movie was recent, and I did post that on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, mm-hmm. if people would like to take a look at that as well as information about our guest book, Deep Secrets, Boys, Friendships, and the Crisis of Connection. And our lines are full, so let's take some calls. Fred in Palmyra is with us first. Hello, Fred.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
I had a good buddy when I was a teenager. You know, we dated girls together. We did everything together until I joined the Navy. I had to. Financially, I just needed to get and do something. So he stayed civilian. He eventually ended up out west, and when I got out of the Navy, I did go out to see him, but he was married and I wasn't, so, you know, it was just a short visit, and I did see him one other time when I was on a vacation in California, but then we didn't see each other for well over 25 years, and then my younger brother ran into him out in Arizona, and my buddy gave my younger brother his phone number, and so I phoned him, and after about 20 minutes or half an hour talking, we ran out of things to say to each other, and I realized that I changed, or he hadn't, or he changed, and
yeah.
And by that time we were in our 50s, and there was nothing there anymore, and I didn't find it all that unusual, but I've never really had a close buddy like that since then. I've got some acquaintances, you know, that you meet at work and things like that, but and a couple of guys that I was in the Navy with that I keep in touch with to get Christmas cards and stuff. But other than that,
that's common.
I mean, I think the sad part of the story for me, Fred, is that that basically it's you know, I don't think necessarily it can be the same person as your experience revealed. You know, it turns out that 30, 40 years later, you don't connect the way you did at an earlier age. So I don't think it necessarily can be the same person as you discovered. But I think the desire to have that intimacy come back into your life is just something that, you know, every man I've talked to repeats the same story. And occasionally there are men who have actually been able to maintain the intimacy, and then the question becomes, how have they been able to do that? But the common story is exactly your story. And the thing that's so striking to me, Fred, is why is it that we find this hard to believe? why do we find this sort of, that men are sort of seeking the same kind of intimacy in their friendships that women are? Why is that so hard to believe? Because it's a human thing. So, and we're both human, men and women. So why are we having this difficulty, understanding the intensity of this desire, and also understanding that this, having those close relationships, Fred, is really critical for, your well-being in many ways.
Yeah. In fact, there were some studies that talking about how having friendships and social circles was very important to your health and longevity.
Yep.
Usually it's the women who have them, though, and the men. The men will say, you know, my wife is my best friend or something, but
yep.
She's the one who has the friends, and she's the one who, you know, leads the social life. And so that's one reason maybe women are do better, they live longer than men.
Yeah, well, you know what, but Joy, that's not a maybe. That's actually been that's what the research is showing, that longevity is linked to social support, and women are more likely to have it. So the fact that men die earlier, which is a known fact,
mm-hmm.
they absolutely link it to the poor social networks. And by the way, they're now finding that social support is a bigger risk factor than obesity, than physical inactivity, all the things that they've oftentimes noted as a high risk factor for longevity. They're now saying social support is up there with smoking and alcohol abuse in terms of a predictor of short, not living long.
Jamie on Facebook writes, there are very few simple truths in life, but every male knows what happens when a close friend enters into a serious relationship with someone else.
Mm.
I think he means your guy friend is going to get married and you're not going to see your guy friend anymore.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is the thing. This is why I want to, I'm glad I had the opportunity to talk about, you know, in the 19th century, honeymoons involved taking the best friend. This is a new phenomenon. It's not something that's just so-called natural, that we feel compelled to make a choice between a wife or a girlfriend and a best friend, or a husband, right, and a best friend. So, I mean, the point is that choice, that we make it a choice rather than, no, of course you need both. You need your spouse. You need your best friends, and you may not only have one, you may have a couple, and that you need your parents, you need, right? I mean, the point is that you need a range of relationships, and the intimacy in there is each in and of itself valuable. The fact that we make it a choice, a girlfriend or a friend, it's a late 20th century problem. And we also don't see that kind of choice being made in other countries. So I really don't want to assume that somehow that choice is so-called natural.
Yeah. Do women have anything to do with this? I don't want you going out with the boys.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as a woman, I can say that with, you know, confidence. I mean, the problem is, guess what? Women live in the same culture as men.
Mm-hmm.
So we believe in the same ideas. So we, you know, we somehow see male friendships as it's not really important. It's just just my husband wanting to go out and, you know, be crazy with his friends, or it's just my husband wanting to, you know, go out and watch a game somewhere. And I'm not saying that's not part of it, because we're all human. We want to go out and have fun. But the point is, oftentimes the desire is certainly at its root not about simply watching a football game. It's really about trying to connect. And you see the way men try to connect in different ways. So I think women, absolutely, we reinforce the worst stereotypes. We reinforce that somehow our husbands don't really need intimacy outside of us. And imagine as a woman, I always say this to women and it always hits them, imagine as a woman, you the only person you had to talk about your relationship with, your romantic relationship with, was your romantic partner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. Like, imagine, that would be suffocating.
Yeah.
If I only had my husband to talk about my relationship with my husband.
Yeah. So women should also lighten up.
Well, women have to see, I mean, this sounds a little dramatic, but women have to see that to be human, right, part of being human is this social-emotional desire for intimate friendships, et cetera, intimate relationships, is a human thing. So women have to see that men are human too, right? Mm-hmm. Just like women are, men are human too.
Charlie in Superior is with us now. Hi, Charlie.
Hello. I'm listening to this, and I'm just growing more and more skeptical as I'm listening to this. I really don't have a desire to talk about my relationship with my wife with anyone other than her.
Mm.
And ever since, as far back as I can remember, I have really never been interested in having any close, intimate relationship with another male.
Mm.
To this day, if I have an opportunity to go on an all-male retreat somewhere, I generally decline. I don't mind being in a situation where there are couples all together, or in a situation where I'm the only male and there's a dozen or so females around. But intimacy with another male, I have absolutely no interest in that whatsoever. So I'm curious what your guest thinks of that. Do I have a problem?
No. No, I mean, you know, with any kind of pattern, quite frankly, with any kind of pattern, there's always variation. So absolutely. I mean, I think there's variation. There's men who have been able to keep close friendships. There's men who don't particularly feel any real desire to have close friendships with other men. I mean, there's absolutely variability. So what I would say is that the larger pattern of what I've heard from men suggests that there is a desire to have these kinds of close friendships with other men. But I certainly think that, you know, there's lots of room for the ways in which we have separate desires. And there's some people who, you know, also claim, you know, that the whole even sort of sharing it even with their spouse is not something that, you know, that is particularly something they're willing or able to do. So I think the answer is no. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think, you know, one thing I would wonder about in terms of your past experience is if men had sort of been more, if boys and men in your own life had been more willing and able in some ways to open up themselves, whether you would still feel this way now in your life. I'm not so sure. Because I think part of your own sense of your lack of desire might come from the fact that you're surrounded by, you know, men who have a really hard time doing this. So it becomes, quite frankly, not very attractive to be friends with them, because why would you do that? They're not sharing anyway.
Charlie, thank you for the call. I think Dave in Colesburg, Iowa, is going to follow up on that. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think a lot of it has to do with, like, your father, and maybe I'm wrong
on
this.
Yep.
Because I remember when I was growing up, my dad, everything, you know, you try to express your feelings, and it would be like, well, grow up or be a man or something like that. So then you become despondent.
Yep.
And then it comes to, like, you're talking about 15 or 16 years old.
Yep.
Now, I lost my best friend due to a relationship. He started seeing this girl, she didn't like me, et cetera, et cetera. But now, they went out for a couple of years. Then what happened was they broke up, and now we're still best friends, but we still do not talk.
Mm.
I mean, we've been best friends for 20-some years, but we still do not talk. We've lost that somewhere. But I think it's all based on, like I said, is the way your father or your parents raise you.
Yep. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, and we actually see that in our studies, that if you have someone at home, it could be a mom or a dad. It's oftentimes the mom, because guess what? Women have an easier time doing this because of our culture around this issue. If you have at least one parent at home that actually fosters, right, emotional expression, fosters relationships, fosters friendships, you're much more likely as an adult to have them. If you have a parent at home, and the reverse is true, if you have a parent at home, and unfortunately it's much more likely to be the father, who discourages that, who really makes you feel terrible when you actually do engage in that kind of behavior, it's almost inevitable that you will struggle with that in your life. Because it's so part of, I mean, the father's message, unfortunately, fits in exactly how the culture sees it. So if it gets reinforced by your father, it's incredibly hard as a man to be able to resist that when it's been reinforced by your dad.
Yeah. Dave, thank you so much for the call. I'm wondering, when you say you still have this old friend as your best friend today, but you really don't talk, or you just hang out, but you don't really talk about, deep issues?
No, we don't talk about deep issues. I live in Iowa. He's in the Navy in California. So, I mean, we get together, he comes back, and that's just, you know, we hang out, and that's about it.
I see. It's not, but it's not, he's not somebody you see on a weekly basis or anything like
that.
No.
So it just kind of fell apart. And, mm-hmm. I find that my relationships with females now, you know, and like I said, I relate this to my father. I mean, I'm kind of close. I don't say too much, you know, what other people will think, or what she'll think, or anybody will think. So
No, I mean, you know, I have to just say it's really unfortunate. I hope fathers are listening to this, because I really do think, you know, if fathers are actually able to encourage their boys to be, and again, at the risk of sounding dramatic, if they're able to foster, you know, their son's humanity, their ability for their son to be human. They grow up to be men that have an easier time having quality relationships. And so, you know, I mean, I hope fathers out there are listening.
Joe in Madison emails, I'm a new UW student and I'm a Marine Corps vet. Mm. I went to a student Vets for Vets club last night at a bar. I think it was easier for me to meet people and start potential friendships because of our mutual service.
Yep.
The military has a culture in which you become extremely close to the other men.
So this is something that people have told me, and I think mm-hmm. it's fascinating. So people who are in the military, as well as people, by the way, men who are in close-knit sports teams, it's not always the case, because obviously you can get some sort of, you know, hyper, you know, extreme masculinity behavior in those kinds of settings. But the reality is that oftentimes, especially in the military, where you're really facing tough times together, you do get a kind of intimacy among the men in those units that I think is really interesting, and that it really is. You also get this, by the way, in boys' schools oftentimes, if the climate sort of allows that, this kind of close connection. So I would say absolutely with the military, that's where I think you're actually oftentimes fostering these kinds of close connections, and they oftentimes last their lifetime. So men will tell me, you know, I'm still in contact with so-and-so from my unit. And I mean, it's interesting that you would, because the stereotype is that, you know, the military would not foster that. But the reality is, if you're put in tough situations, and so that having to face those together immediately draws you closer.
Thanks very much, Joe, for the email. And thanks for your service, too. We'll be probably doing some programming tomorrow on Veterans Day about veterans and veterans issues. So right now, though, we are talking about male friendships and how boys and men need intimate, close friendships as much as girls do, according to our guest. Talking about, though, how boys generally drift away from their friends because society tells them to man up and ignore their emotional needs. We're talking about what to do about this and why this is a problem. With the author of Deep Secrets, Boys' Friendships and the Crisis of Connection. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock. Kathleen will be talking with the author of Weaving Diversity into the Fabric of America, coming up after 9 o'clock this morning. We are talking with Niobe Way. She is a professor of applied psychology at New York University, president of the Society for Research on Adolescence, and author of the book Deep Secrets, Boys' Friendships and the Crisis of Connection. And our next caller is Sasha in Nina. Good morning.
Good morning. Great show. Just want to comment. I came to this country when I was 16 from Eastern Europe, and I believe that everything that Niobe is saying is pretty much true, but I think it is cultural predominantly that drives that lack of intimacy and subsequently friendships in the men or boys.
Yep.
Because you know, the men and boys are raised to be these hard, tough, you know, rigid, and, you know, supposedly strong. And the intimacy aspect from the young age is completely, completely missing. And I had a hard time finding friends
yep.
who would be able to accept me for the way that I am. I mean, I can kiss a guy, I can hug a guy. And I mean, and I am straight.
But
I think it's cultural, because in Europe, it's not like that. Not what I've seen.
Yeah. So this is interesting. So I mean, it's absolutely true, and the data suggests that as well. That you're really having something that's you know, very distinctly American. Some people have also said it's also true in England to a certain extent. But certainly I think it's an American phenomenon. And I think, unfortunately, though, with globalization, what's getting globalized, unfortunately, is this sort of incredibly hyper-masculine stance. It's the lone cowboy that serves as our icon in this country that really does a disservice to boys and men, which is the notion that somehow, you know, the epitome of a hero is someone who can do it on their own and, you know, basically doesn't need any other people. And European men, for the most part, and men in other countries as too, in Asia as well, don't have that kind of image of maturity. I mean, what's incredible to me in listening to these questions as well is that emotions being, you know, having this intimacy is associated with being immature, mm-hmm. you know, as being a child. I mean, it's stunning to me. It's stunning to me. And the listener is absolutely right. In Europe, you really do get a much more sort of sense that boys are able to actually have close friends. Men are able to have close friends.
Sasha, thank you so much for the call. And I'm wondering, Niobe, if you have any thoughts for a man who wants to reestablish with an old friend or start a new friendship, to have this really close friendship, what to do in this type of a...
Well, you know, I mean, I think there's many different things. I mean, I think one of the things I've been watching with teenage boys, so there's been a growing group of teenage boys who are reading the book that just came out, mm-hmm. my book. And at some level, that sounds like I'm just promoting my book, but mm-hmm. I'm actually not at the moment. So they're reading my book, and they're using that as a starting point to have conversations about what they want in friendships and what they're looking for. And so they're actually using it as a springboard to talk about their own friendships and to talk about what they want. And boys are now talking to each other about it, but really what they're doing is building close friendships with each other. Mm-hmm. And I would say the same thing with adult men. Figure out, you know, whether it's a reading group, whether it's some kind of, you know, thing that you want to organize with your other male friends, people who you think are potentially close friends, and you start, you know, deciding that you want to read a bunch of books, you want to go out on an activity, and then talk about, you know, the topic of friendships. I think it's amazing how quickly men are actually willing to talk about it if you give them the space to talk about it. So I would just say that to your listeners. If you actually raise the topic with your other, you know, people who you'd like to be friends with, you'd be stunned, I think, how much they are actually willing to talk about it, as long as there's space to do it. And starting from a book, whether it's my book or somebody else's book, is a great starting point because it feels safe. Right, it feels like you're talking about something that's not necessarily about you.
Let me take another call from Greg in Madison. Hello, Greg.
Thanks so much. I just wanted to point out that in addition to being emotional and social creatures, we're also individuals.
Yep.
Like there is some level at which other people aren't going to understand our situation, or some people will and some people won't.
Yep.
And I think there's a huge political dimension to this aspect, too. If you look at conservative politics, they're going very much against what you're saying.
Yeah.
So I want to know how you include that in your model.
Yeah. So I think, you know, the bottom line is that we're in trouble as a culture, right? We know that through the fact that we are the most violent of the industrialized countries. We're the most violent country. We rank poorly in all educational indicators of all industrialized countries. Our health status is incredibly poor compared to other industrialized countries. So we're in trouble. Right. So at some level, yes, I'm not saying in any way, and I would never say that somehow people aren't individuals and that we have desires for autonomy and we need to value that we are individuals. But the point is that why are we so in trouble? Why is violence so high in this country? And I would say the basis is that we're actually not connecting well enough. So, no, not everybody's going to understand your story, but the desire to want to share your story and to try to get an empathic response is a human thing. And if we don't foster that, we'll continue to go into this, you know, to be in this cycle of violence and social problems that we have in this country at a very deep level.
Here is an email from Ed. It is my experience that male relationships are based on competition, whether it be games, sports, or other activities. Any thoughts on this?
Yeah. Well, that's the stereotype. So you know, and at some level, having a boy who's on a soccer team, my son is on a soccer team, and he's very competitive, and he talks obsessively about sports. Yes, that is an element of a boy's experience. I also think it's an element of girls' experience as well. However, that's not the only element. So I'm not saying that there's not a competitive element to friendships. I'm not saying that boys don't want competition at some level. I'm saying that there's a part of the story we're missing, which is they also want the intimacy. So it's not an either-or is the bottom line.
Mm-hmm. Next, we go to Lisa in Eau Claire. Hello, Lisa.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say I'm a single parent of four sons, and
congratulations.
Thank you. and their father and I we're divorced, but we definitely co-parent. We're really in contact with one another constantly. But one area that we disagree on is having the boys. You know, talking with the boys about their feelings and about the choices that they need to make. I encourage that a lot in my home, and we do that a lot in my home, but once they go out into society, it definitely is discouraged, I would say. It's not encouraged at all, and it's difficult.
Right. So I would, you know, basically your strategy of parenting is backed up by now almost 30 years of research that suggests that that leads to healthier boys, boys who live longer, boys who are less likely to get colds, flus. I mean, if you look at what the research indicates about the positive outcomes of raising boys the way you are, it goes across the board, you know, longevity, health, mental health, able to have long-term relationships, marital relationships included, able to, you know, have those kind of positive opposite sex as well as same-sex relationships. So basically you're doing the right thing, and the whole thing is to just get support for your strategy, and you may not get support from your ex-husband, but you know, the there is a world out there growing, just to let you know, that understands the necessity of your parenting strategies and the essential nature of them to create healthy men. So you're just on the right track, and I just have to say, repeat the congratulations, you're doing the right thing. But it is hard. I have to say, it's hard for me as a mother to fight the sort of larger culture, and the way I do it is I constantly repeat, you know, this is what 30 years of research suggests, this is the right strategy, you know, this is what creates healthy men, men who live longer, and that's what I want my son to do.
Thank you very much, Lisa. And finally, Lamont in Milwaukee says, my grandfather always used to say you can tell the character of a man by the length of his friendships. I have been friends with my best friend since 1949, and I don't know what I would do without that guy in my life.
My God. Okay, so that what a beautiful last comment to end on. I think you know, it's interesting to me because I have gotten a lot of, so 1949, I'm trying to think of it. So I have gotten
60-ish,
a lot. So 60s. I've gotten a lot of comments that oftentimes the men who most resonate. Okay, so the people who resonate with the book, and who write me emails and write me sometimes handwritten letters, which is a joy to receive, is teenage boys and young men in their 20s, and men over 65.
Oh.
And those two groups of men are the men who almost across the board will write me letters like that. They'll say, I get it. You know, this is exactly what, you know, my life has been about. Either I've been able to maintain my friendship or I haven't, but I understand the essential nature of this. I understand the importance of it. And, you know, my question again, they will ask me, is why this isn't out in the public.
Well, it is now. And in our final minute, do you hope, do you think more of us will get this?
Yeah, I think, you know, I take a very much, having done this for now 20 years, I take a one step at a time. So I teach at NYU. I talk to my students about this. I talk to teenagers every week. I go to high schools, talk to parents, talk to teachers, you know, all different people, all different ages. And they, you know, each of them has their own story to share, which is wonderful to hear. And then it's one step at a time. And then you start to see movement. You start to see people taking this seriously as parents, as teachers, as, you know, people mm-hmm. who engage with kids and teenagers themselves. Teenagers themselves that say, you know, knowing this makes me feel less alone. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm less of a weirdo, that I thought I was the only one that wanted this.
Well, it's been fascinating. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Niobe Way, author of Deep Secrets, Boys Friendships, and the Crisis of Connection. Thanks to Amanda Magnus and to Bill Martins for producing this hour. Thanks for joining us. Tomorrow it's the Week in Review. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.